Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for October 21st, 2011.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Those who are African-American had vitamin D deficiency 63% of the time, which translates into about a 3.5 times increased risk for vitamin D deficiency for African-Americans.
If you inhibit only those antibodies, you will not be inhibiting the rest of the antibodies that are actually effectively defending your body from pathogens.
And it turns out that about 4 out of 5 times the computer was right.
One of the difficulties with breath is it has a lot of water in it, and it usually interferes with detecting the compounds that we're interested in.
This week, a breath test for toxins, why binge drinking impairs the immune system, a new tool in the weapon against allergic reactions, and measuring pain in the brain. But first, Suzanne Bard reports on why medical recommendations for vitamin D supplementation need to be revised.
Vitamin D deficiency can cause brittle bones and has been associated with breast, colon, and prostate cancers. Now, a new study suggests that a one-size-fits-all approach to supplementation is not adequate to address the problem. Researchers Adam Murphy of Northwestern University and Rick Kittles of the University of Illinois, Chicago, measured vitamin D levels in nearly 700 Chicago-area men. Murphy says 44% of the volunteers were deficient in the nutrient.
If you separate it out by race or ethnicity, the folks that we classified as European-American had vitamin D deficiency 18% of the time, whereas those who are African-American had vitamin D deficiency 63% of the time, which translates into about a 3.5 times increased risk for vitamin D deficiency for African-Americans.
He says African-Americans are particularly susceptible to vitamin D deficiency in northern latitudes because they have more of the pigment melanin in their skin. Melanin protects the skin from harmful ultraviolet rays that can cause skin cancer.
So it protects skin from skin cancers like basal cell cancer and squamous cell cancer of the skin. But it also blocks the sun rays so well that it can interfere with the skin's ability to make vitamin D from the sun's radiation.
He says both men and women should get their vitamin D levels checked regularly and talk to their doctors about their specific supplementation needs, taking into account their skin tone and the place they live in.
Thanks, Suzanne. Heavy drinking can weaken resistance to infections. Now researchers have new insights into why. University of Massachusetts Medical School Professor Yunyi Sabo and her colleagues took blood from healthy volunteers and isolated immune cells called monocytes.
And then in a test tube, we exposed them to alcohol at the concentration of alcohol that we know occurs in individuals after binge drinking. So this would be a little bit above the legal limit.
Even a single dose of that much alcohol weakened the immune response to viral and bacterial attacks. Prolonged exposure also increased markers of inflammation. That's especially relevant for chronic infections like hepatitis, in which inflammation is a key cause of organ damage. Next, Sabo wants to find out if moderate drinking could have similar effects. Speaking of alcohol, police have been using breath tests to check drivers for alcohol intoxication for many years. Now, new research may lead to a similar test for exposure to dangerous chemicals. Justin Warner has that story.
People today are constantly exposed to all sorts of industrial chemicals, which can cause cancer and other illnesses. But it's impractical to go fishing for possible exposures using blood tests. In a recent report, Virginia Tech engineers Andrea Dietrich, Masood Aga, and their colleagues say that our breath may be the best place to start checking for these toxins. Dietrich says new technologies are making this feasible.
One of the difficulties with breath is it has a lot of water in it, and it usually interferes with detecting the compounds that we're interested in. So the advances are developing traps for the organic compounds we're interested in that are not sensitive to water but are sensitive to the organics. Having those traps operate so they can detect part per trillion and part per billion amounts of the chemicals, because breath has lots of trace compounds in it that are indicators. And then once those are trapped, being able to analyze those compounds. And what we've done in our lab is we've developed new traps, and then we can flash heat those traps to, you know, a few hundred degrees centigrade, quickly dissolve the compounds in a really tight little slug, and then analyze them using conventional equipment, particularly gas chromatography and mass spectrometry.
There are still obstacles, for example, learning to distinguish real signs of danger from normal variations in what people exhale. Still, Dietrich is optimistic that breath tests will help save lives cheaply and easily in the years ahead.
Thanks, Justin. Allergic reactions can range from irritating to deadly. Now, University of Notre Dame biomolecular engineer Bashar Bilgisar and his colleagues are developing a new way to stop these reactions from happening. They're engineering molecules called heterobivalent ligands, or HBLs, that block the antibodies that trigger a specific allergy.
If you inhibit only those antibodies, you will not be inhibiting the rest of the antibodies that are actually effectively defending your body from pathogens. You will be inhibiting the antibodies that were not supposed to be there.
For example, one HBL might block antibodies to peanuts, while another might target antibodies to penicillin. That's much safer than suppressing the entire immune system. Bilgisar says the therapy could be used not only to manage chronic allergies, but to prevent unexpected reactions to emergency medications. In our final story this week, millions of people suffer from intractable chronic pain. Suzanne reports that researchers are developing a new way to detect pain in the brain.
Pain often goes undertreated, in part because there's no objective way to measure its severity. Now, a team of researchers has taken the first steps toward developing an unbiased measure of pain. Northwestern University researcher Neil Chatterjee and his colleagues applied a painful heat stimulus to the forearms of volunteers while scanning their brains. They used the scans to create a computer model of what pain looks like in the brain.
So now we have this model and we need to test it. So we take 16 more subjects, we scan them with and without pain, then we give these scans to the computer, and this is, I think, the really cool part. The computer has never seen these people before. So then the computer takes these scans of people it's never seen, it compares them to this model it's created of what pain looks like, and then it tells us, okay, I think this person is feeling pain right now, or no, I don't think this person is feeling pain right now. And it turns out that about 4 out of 5 times the computer was right.
He says much work is needed before the technique can be used to assess more subtle gradations of pain. But he says it could one day be used to improve pain management.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, why fish tanks are breeding grounds for aggression, and why the oceans of the future may belong to jellyfish. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.